correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role.
www.d20radio.com. Game on.
Welcome, Gamer Nation, to episode 1 of Game On for Saturday, December the 20th, 2008. Game On is your D20 radio podcast for all things gaming-related. We cover everything from board games to card games to video games, plus a bunch of other stuff we feel like talking about. I'm your host, Brian, otherwise known as Fiddleback on the forums, and with me is my co-host and good friend, Andy.
Greetings, Gamer Nation. This is Andy, also known as Ravenwing on the forums. Brian, how the heck are you?
I'm absolutely wonderful for the second time.
Second time, yes. This is actually episode 1.1.
That's right. Technical difficulties, entirely Andy's fault, have caused us to restart the show. That's all right. Andy, what are we talking about this week?
I knew until just a minute ago when you asked me. On this week's cast, we're going to focus on gateway games. Those are the kinds of games that get people interested in the board gaming hobby and keep them hooked. But first...
Upkeep phase. Welcome to the Upkeep Phase portion of the show. We'll use this time to send out some thank yous, promote some other things we listen to, and generally handle any housekeeping issues that, you know, might arise.
Housekeeping issues might arise?
Well, have you seen my house?
Spot fires and things like that. And my toboggan is still smoking. First of all, we'd like to thank GM Chris and GM Dave and the entire D20 Radio Network for helping to make this podcastable. Podcastable? Podcast possible.
Oh, wow.
And I haven't even had a drink yet.
No. This will definitely be the all drinking, all singing.
It will, yes. I burst into song and dance, but I'm not going to. We'd also like to thank everyone who listened and subscribed to our first show, episode 0. Why they let us make another one, I'll never know. Your response was tremendous and immensely gratifying. Wow.
Gamer Nation, it's officially part of the drinking rules to drink whenever Andy flubs a word. It's okay.
Oh, you guys are hosed. We wouldn't be able to do the show if it wasn't for fans like you.
Check out some of our sister shows on the D20 Radio Network while you're at it. The Order 66 podcast, D20 Radio's flagship program, focusing on all things Star Wars Saga Edition RPG related, just released episode 47, Tipsy Tips and Holocron Hijinks, wherein they discuss how to prepare to GM a Star Wars RPG game and make it seem easy, unlike anything we've ever done.
Yeah, like, oh, a podcast.
Notes?
Brian comes to me one day and says, hey, I've got a great idea. Let's do a podcast. It'll be easy.
And the fool that you are, you agreed.
Yes, of course. Yeah, suckered me in like you don't know what. Also available on the D20 Radio Network, The Holocron, for current and future fans of the upcoming MMO being developed by BioWare, Star Wars The Old Republic. Hosted by Mostly Joe and GM Dave, your best source. Wow, there you go, guys. For news and information about all things The Old Republic related. Episode 4 goes up Sunday, and they'll be taking listener calls as they fondly remember MMOs of the past.
Also available is the latest installment of Meanwhile, the Super Gaming Podcast. Join Mostly Joe and his guest co-host Old School from the forums as they discuss the solar? Okay, now you can drink when I do it. The solo player and the state of superheroes in the UK. They are drunk. Meanwhile, is your home for all things superhero related.
Superhero related, yeah. Are you a fan of D&D 4th edition? Then Radio Free Homelet is the podcast for you. Even though they are on a hiatus at the moment, you can find all their episodes here on the D20 Radio Network. Check them out for rules discussions, character building suggestions, and good GM advice. We know a few people who could use some good GM advice.
Either good GM advice or a 2x4 to the head.
I'm going with that one.
Yeah. All these podcasts and more can be found on D20 Radio's homepage at www.d20radio.com. Just follow the links off the front page to access all these fine shows and to access the community forums where you can get your game geek on with any of us and many of our other dedicated fans.
Since you're going to be on the forums anyway, and we know you will, why not follow the D20 Radio swag thread and check out some of the wonderful shirts available from Nick at Crazy Custom Tees. Wear your D20 fandom with pride. Order a t-shirt or two, and keep an eye out for an upcoming Game On t-shirt. Just as soon as we figure out what we want to put on it.
Decisions.
Yes, they are many.
Are you ready?
I think so.
Okay, here we go.
Bits and Pieces.
This is our new segment called Bits and Pieces, where we share with you some of the latest bits and exciting news and pieces of information from around the gaming world.
That's right. Exciting bits and news.
Like bits.
Days of Wonder has announced a new title for the Memoir 44 game system, called Campaign Book Volume 1, which is a hardcover book of scenarios that are grouped into different campaigns with the results of one scenario carrying over into later ones in the same campaign. Is that cool or what?
That's awesome.
Yeah. For those of you unfamiliar with Memoir 44, it's a World War II miniatures board game in the style of Commands and Colors Ancients and the now classic Battle Cry. In all, the 112-page full-color book includes 51 scenarios, as well as new unit and reserve markers, additional game tokens, and nine new unit, weapon, and terrain cards. Campaign Book Volume 1 will be released in the U.S. and Europe in February 2009 with a retail price of $30 or 30 euros. Phalanx Games and Ulrich Blenneman, or Ulrich Blenneman, or Urkel, whatever.
I'm glad you had to read that name.
Yeah. Announced that Steam, the revised German version of Age of Steam, which is being released by Mayfair Games in the U.S., is due out in late March. No details on when Mayfair is releasing the game in English beyond the first quarter of 2009.
Yes, because we all in the United States will be waiting for that game to come out. Age of Steam is one of those games that is not difficult to find, more along the lines of impossible to find.
Yeah, it is so out of print, it's not even funny at this point. So we're really looking forward to seeing Steam. Twilight Creations Incorporated, the publishers of the popular Zombies board game, has reached an agreement with Pinnacle Entertainment Group to create a board game from their award-winning, best-selling, really cool, totally awesome Deadlands property.
How cool?
Very cool. Very cool. Like, so cool you could keep a side of beef in it for a week. The game, to be designed by Carrie and Todd Breitenstein, of Twilight Creations, with input from Shane Hensley, the creator of Deadlands, is set for initial release in June.
I'm going to mark that on my calendar. If you're interested in more news of the gaming world, including additional details on these stories and more, be sure to visit www.boardgamenews.com and www.gamingreport.com, two of the finest sources of gaming news available on the intraweb.
The interwebs. It's a series of tubes.
Yes, connected.
Say, I'm looking for some sort of abstract strategy game, something with possibly parasitic conflict or bidding and economics, something with majority control and mass marketing, min-maxing that'll make people want to run away in fear and not play anything other than rock, paper, scissors. Have you got anything like that?
What the heck did he just say? Well, Gamer Nation, this is the part of the show where we take a few minutes to define some of the terms we like to throw around on here, such as flaming toboggan.
Sure, throw me under the bus.
Yep, that's what we do. This is going to be a regular bit because we would not like you, Gamer Nation, dear sweet Gamer Nation, to become lost and confused, as if cast adrift on a sea of rarefied nomenclature. We want you to know just as much as we do, and understand just what the heck it is we're talking about anyway.
Nomenclature. Is that like a clay gnome?
I don't know. It was on my calendar this morning. I used it.
Oh, okay. You've got one of those calendars.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the terms that you'll hear us say from time to time, well, actually, you'll hear us say it all the time, board game geek. First and foremost, Gamer Nation, we'd like to share with you the preeminent board gaming site on the intrawebs. There is no finer resource for your board and card gaming needs than www.boardgaminggeek.com. This is where Brian and I do our research. If there is a game in existence, or that used to exist, or that will be existing soon, you'll find it on the Geek, as we like to call it. You'll find any bit of information you need. You can find every board or card game we talk about at www.boardgamegeek.com.
And it is an awesome resource. You got.
I blame you for introducing me to that site.
Well, you know what? Tough.
I've got, you know, I don't have as many games as you, but I was going through mine the other day, and I've got about 100 board games sitting around the place now.
Yeah, well, that's the price you pay for being cool like me.
If only I were that cool.
Yeah. Seriously, though, Board Game Geek is the resource to go to if there's anything you want to know about any game, and, you know, even beyond things we talk about, that's the way to go. They've got full forums there. They've got an incredible user community. Thousands and thousands of geeks from all over the world congregate there and hang out and chat and talk about games, and you should really, really check it out.
It's a very good place to learn about some of the new games that are coming out. There's people on there that play test these games and work on the development phases of these games. A lot of times you can find out stuff that nobody else is going to know about until the game comes out. You can see pre-release photography and things of that nature, what the bits and pieces are going to look like when they do finally come out. Board Game Geek is really good. The community is really good about updating the games, keeping you up to date with
all kinds of things.
Rules and other things like that, rewrites and things of that nature. So if you've got a game and you think something might not be quite right with it, you don't think you're playing it right, take a look on the Geek and you can probably find out whether you are or not.
Yeah, and one of the other nice features of the Geek is there's a lot of user-generated content there as well. Say, like, you've played Risk 45 billion times. Well, if you go on the Geek, you can find alternate rules, different scenarios, all kinds of stuff. And that goes for just about any game you care to name. It's an amazing resource and one you should definitely check out if you have any interest in board games at all. Our next term is one we will use quite a bit today. That is gateway game. Since this is our topic for the week, let's figure out what we mean when we say gateway game. Board Game Geek, our previous definition, defines it as follows. Gateway game, a noun. A game with simple rules that are easy to teach non-gamers in order to attract new players into board gaming as a hobby. These are the games that keep you coming back to the table over and over again. They keep you there, they make you want to play, they're interesting, they're fun, and most of all, they're fairly simple. We're going to have a big, long discussion about that, aren't we, Andy?
Well, yeah, we're going to try anyways. You know, nothing goes horribly askew.
Yes, horribly askew. That never happens to us.
No, hardly ever.
Yeah. So, as they say in the big leagues, the more you know, the more you have half the battle or something.
Yo-Jo. Something like that.
Yeah, whatever. Well, on
Gateway Game. You know, that's is that like Gateway Drug?
No. Stop that. Well, yeah. First hit's free. No. Never mind.
Hey, kid, want to roll some dice?
Here, take a card. Any card. All right, on with the show. Today, Gamer Nation, we're going to talk about Gateway Games. As we discussed earlier, Gateway Games are those games that bring you into the hobby, are fairly easy to play, and keep you coming back for more.
Watanabe2K wrote in to ask us a few questions in the D20 Radio forums. He writes, "So, my girlfriend and I own copies of Ticket to Ride and Settlers of Catan, but we have trouble finding other games that we enjoy. We've played a lot, but we really seem to enjoy games with strategy that do it in fun ways like you see in Catan and Ticket to Ride. Do you have any other games that you would like to recommend that are along the lines of those two games?"
Oh boy, do we. Okay, so it works like this, guys. Everybody kind of grew up playing Monopoly and Scrabble and Connect Four and Operation and all those. And those are generally people's first introductions to board games. Unfortunately, they're also usually people's last for some fairly serious reasons. Andy, why do you think those games don't really work to keep people hooked in the hobby?
Well, and they become repetitive in a bad way. One of the ones that you mentioned right away, it's not a bad game necessarily, it's just it loses its flavor very, very quickly, and that's Monopoly.
Yes, what little flavor it has.
Yes, I think we should change the name to Monotony, but that's just my opinion. You know, nothing against the game producers. Well, maybe a little bit.
Well, true enough. I mean, Monopoly suffers from a couple of major problems. One, everybody thinks they know how to play, and nobody ever bothers to really read the rules. I'll give you one example. Most people, if you have a tax or something like that that occurs to you off of the chance cards in Monopoly, where does that money go? Where does it go, Andy?
To the bank?
No.
No?
Well, it should. But most people put that right under free parking. You know what that does to Monopoly?
Breaks it?
Yeah, it makes it about 4 hours longer than it's supposed to be.
4 hours of Monopoly? That's not right.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is what we call a house rule. It's not in the regular rules, and people just do it because it's friendlier that way. It keeps people in the game that way, because Monopoly's other big problem is if you don't play with the money under free parking rule, you can lose really fast and really early while everybody else is still playing.
But that means I could be doing something else.
Yeah, I know. And you and I, that's a good thing. Because if we're in a place where we're having to play Monopoly, clearly we have died and gone to the Bernie joint.
Yeah, yeah. The hot place.
The hot place. So, not playing by the official rules and early player elimination are two of the main problems with Monopoly. Never mind the fact that the dice rolls are all random and the cards are all random and you have no real control over what you're doing and how the game is going. Other games that we mentioned, like Connect Four. Connect Four is what we call solved.
Come on now, I like that game.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe. You know, it's good if you're...
I got four in a row. Where? I don't see it. Right here. See it? Okay, who cares? All right, I want you to think for a minute, okay? Connect Four. Think down so that your board on Connect Four is only a set of 3x3 locations. What game are you playing now?
Wait. Yeah, tic-tac-toe.
Right. And does anybody not know how to at least get a cat's game in tic-tac-toe every single time?
Take the center square.
Yeah. And really, if you're playing tic-tac-toe against somebody who's extremely inexperienced at tic-tac-toe, you should be able to win every time. You don't ever need to actually lose a game of tic-tac-toe. Well, guess what, kids? That's solved. So is Connect Four. It's just a bigger grid. Okay? There's no reason, if you take the time to pay attention to what you're doing and what your opponent's doing, there's no reason for you to ever lose a game of Connect Four.
Come on, it's all 3D and stand-up-y and use checkers.
Yeah, uh-huh. Those are used checkers from people who were too poor to afford checkerboards.
What are you trying to say?
Well, you know, your family, whatever. I don't care. whatever. I'm not going to impugn the childhood you had. Stop
sorry,
crying.
Sorry, Game Nation. I had a moment there.
Yeah. All right, so Connect Four is, if you've never played it before, great, okay, put a checker in, slide it in. Ooh, yay, exciting. Flip the switch, they dump out on the table. Let me tell you something. Just save yourself a lot of time, a lot of trouble. Put the checkers in the damn grid, flip the switch, take them out, put them in again. That's all the entertainment you're going to have there. That's it.
It is kind of fun to do that.
Yeah, it is kind of, yeah, especially if you do it off the top of a 4-story building. Although, I don't recommend City Hall. They get nervous. Okay, so the essential problem with each of these games, these early games that people get introduced to, is that they aren't really much of a game in the first place. Yes, there's a certain age and a certain time when people enjoy playing these kinds of games. All right, once you get into high school, you should probably move on to something a little bit better. One of the things we like to suggest as an initial gateway game, and there is a bit of a debate about this, but we like to suggest it anyway, is a game called Settlers of Catan. And many an hour has been burned up playing Settlers of Catan over and over and over.
Yeah, we just pretty much use the clock for kindling at that point.
Right. Settlers of Catan is a game that focuses on the development of the first people to arrive on the island of Catan. Several interesting features about this game. The first is that the board isn't really a board. It's a variety of octagonal, right? Yeah, octagonal.
Hexagon.
Hexagonal.
Gesundheit.
Thank you. Got a little bit on the mic. Okay. Hexagonal tiles that you place down in a fairly random order.
Random.
Yes. Each of these tiles shows a different type of terrain. Hills, forests, fields, mountains, and one desert tile. Each of these tiles produces a particular type of resource. Sheep are produced on fields. Grain is produced on... sheep are produced on meadows. Grain is produced in fields. Okay, I don't know what I'm doing.
I thought sheep produced sheep.
Sheep do produce sheep. We don't like to mention that, so they come out of the fields. Oh, another moment.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. So you produce a variety of resources. You get rocks, you get clay, or brick, as some people call it. You get sheep, you get...
Wood.
Yeah, wood's an entirely different story. We'll cover the wood thing here in a minute.
Would you?
I would. Yeah, I'm just pining to do it. Oh, dear. Anyway, Okay, so you develop all these resources, you collect all these resources, which you then use to build cities and roads and towns that get placed on the game board to mark your progress. You accrue points as you place each of these things, and the first player to 12 points wins. Now, that sounds simple enough, right?
Sure.
Yeah, it's not. Simple. It's not.
It is.
It's never simple.
Simple.
Mm-mm. Okay, so what happens is this. And this is usually the part of the game that really hooks people into it. You collect each of these resources as a card which gets placed into your hand. Now, the problem here is you don't get all the resources all the time. You have to roll the nifty die. Depending on what comes up on the die determines what areas of the board are producing what resources at a given moment. If you have a city or a town on a space bordering the tile that is producing, you get that resource. If you don't, you get nothing.
Bupkis.
Yeah. Zero.
Nine.
Zeep. Okay. So, everything you can do in the board game requires that you have some assortment of these resources. If you don't have the resource you need to build what you want to build, or what you have to build, you don't have a whole lot of options, normally, except that this game allows you to trade resources with the other players.
Brilliant.
Yeah. If I have in my hand 3 sheep, a clay, or a brick, whatever you want to call it, and a stone...
You've got a mess.
I got a mess. But more importantly, what I haven't got is any wheat. If Andy's sitting over across the table from me and he's got a whole bunch of wheat but he doesn't have any sheep, he's got a mess too. But we can make our messes better. Because I can look at Andy and I can say, Andy, I'll trade you a sheep for some wheat.
And I might be inclined to take that deal.
Yeah.
Or I might try and make him sweeten the pot a little bit. Maybe 2 sheep for a wheat.
Right. This is where it gets fun. You can trade anything for anything in any amount as long as both players agree to it. Now, this is great in the early game as you're just getting started because you get your roads out and you get your buildings up and that kind of stuff. But in the late game, this becomes a little bit troublesome.
Kind of like nuclear warfare.
Yeah, because at some point Andy's going to realize that maybe I only need to put down another town to win the game. Except I'm not getting what I need to build a town. So at some point I'm going to foolishly ask Andy, oh, Andy, can you trade me some sheep for some wood? Can I get wood for sheep?
Wood for sheep?
And Andy's going to look at me and say,
no.
Oh, man. How am I supposed to do this? Okay, how about wood for 2 sheep?
Possibly.
Possibly. So the late game gets kind of tricky, because if it's really obvious what you're going to be building or what you need to build to win the game, good luck getting it. Fortunately, the game has a mechanism to take care of this for you, or at least try to take care of this for you. Around the edge of the board are several trading ports. And what this essentially means is you can take any set of 4 cards to trade in for any other given resource. But the trick is, you have to have a building, either a town or a city, on these ports in order to use them. You cannot use your neighbor's port. Do not covet your neighbor's port. Don't cover his Riesling. Covet his Riesling either. Riesling. Anyway, I don't know what that was. all right. So, the game features a lot of... This is just kind of a basic overview. The game features a lot of complex interactions. The rules are fairly simple, actually. They're laid out in, I think, 5 pages.
It's fairly a thin rules book compared to some we've had.
Right. But it's deep strategically. There's a lot going on. You're trying to manage your growth. You're trying to collect the resources you need. You're trying to be in the right place on the board at the right time when the die rolls. There's a lot going on in this thing, and it sucks people in like you wouldn't believe. Many a night I've spent here at the wonderful Game On Palatial Mansion. I heard that.
Palatial Mansion.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Ask me about the maid sometime. Anyway, playing this game, and it's like, you know, you don't, it's not like Monopoly. You play it once and you put it away and you think, maybe I won't ever have to play that again. You finish a game of Settlers of Catan with the right crowd, and you will play it over and over and over in a single night.
Yeah, it's one of those games that as soon as you're done playing, and it doesn't matter whether you won or whether you came in dead last, you want to turn around and set up another game and go one more time.
Right.
It's just, it's that simple to play, but the depth of it is where it gets you. You get off the deep end, and you're like, somebody throw me a life preserver because I'm sinking here.
That's right. And I will tell you right now that this thing succeeds wonderfully well as a gateway game, as an introduction to people who have never really played real board games before. And I know this because it's what got me into the hobby. I had just come off of a big CCG trading card binge between Doomtown and... Oh, it was an NFL Showdown and a couple other card games. And I was sick and tired of buying expansions to games that I wasn't really playing all that much in the first place. So I'm looking around what was at the time my favorite local gaming store that, you know, was owned by me. This is back, I don't know, 10 years ago now or whatever. But anyway, I'm looking around this place and, you know, it's full of comics and full of card games and... You know, got a bunch of role-playing games. I was kind of tired of that whole schmeal of things right there at the moment. Schmeal, that's a real word.
Schmeal.
Yeah. And I look up. I look up on the shelves where the scant collection. Stop it. Oh dear. I look up on the collection, the shelves where the collection of scant board games is kept, and I see this little red box. With this sort of, I don't know, what do you want to call it, turn-of-the-century-style painting on it. And the thing is, like, about a quarter inch thick in dust, because this guy never dusted his place. And, you know, it was typical game store hangout. But and I thought to myself, well, that game has been up there for my entire memory of this store. So I'm going to, I don't know what it is, I don't know anything about it. I'm going to pull it down off there, and I'm going to take that poor, lonely, sad little game home. 200 games later, I still play Settlers of Catan, and it's still fun.
Every time.
Every single time. Even with bad players, I have not had a bad game. It's just enjoyable. It promotes a lot of table chatter. It promotes a lot of interaction between players. And the most important thing is, in comparison to things like Monopoly and whatnot, is it keeps you in the game. It's not an artificial keeping you in the game either. Everybody is in the game until the end. I have not played a game where everybody wasn't within 2 or 3 points of winning the game when somebody finally won it.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things about it is it doesn't leave you so far behind you have no hope of winning the game. Like you said, it's usually within 1 or 2 points of somebody winning. You've all got those beads of sweat pouring down your forehead because you don't know who's going to draw the next card that will give them the winning point. And that's what draws people in, and that's what keeps people playing that game.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. This is one of the chief features of a gateway game is it keeps you involved to the very end of the game every single time. Now then, another good gateway game. Ticket to Ride. This is a fairly recent gateway game, and I don't know that it was originally planned to be this kind of gateway game. I know that they wanted it simple, they wanted it easy, and they wanted it fun, so they succeeded in that. Ticket to Ride is a game where you lay railroad cars or trains on a board of or a map of the United States in an effort to connect locations on tickets that you get in your hand to one another. So, for example, you'll draw a ticket at the start of the game. It'll say something like Memphis to San Francisco. Okay, so you have to lay down trains that in your color that connect in your color in somebody
yeah,
else.
Yeah, your color. Right. You're trying to connect your colors.
Anyway, okay, so Yeah, you try to lay these things down to connect up from point A to point B. If you do that successfully, then you get the number of points listed on the card. Here's the trick. Everybody else is trying to do the same thing, except they're all going to different locations. So you can run out of track if somebody's playing carefully and paying attention to where you're trying to go. You get several destinations, and the way you get to lay down trains is by drawing train cards off of these other stacks. And you match up the colors, and that lets you put down a train.
Well, that's what it is. It's not, you don't have a specific color of train. Each route has a color, but it's the same general
right.
thing.
Right. See, I knew you were wrong.
I'm going to go sit in the corner. Oh, wait. I'm
you
already
are.
Here.
It's right over there. It's that corner on the couch of doom.
Coming to you live from the Reclinomatic 2000, also known as the couch of doom.
That's right. Several people have entered never to return.
I think I'm sitting on one now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all right. That's the maiden. Anyway, and that really is all there is to Ticket to Ride. It's very simple. But here the fun part comes in as you're trying to get these routes, trying to keep other people from completing theirs, and other people are trying to keep you from completing yours, and there's table discussion, and you're in the game until the very end. He who has the most points at the end wins.
Correct.
When you run out of trains.
Out of trains.
Yeah. In a
yes.
given color, I
end
believe.
The line.
End of the line.
Yes, in a lot. In it.
End of line, Sark. Yeah.
The neat thing about it is if you know it brings into the game that some people will come to appreciate as known as the screw you factor.
Yes.
Closing off other routes because you know somebody is going for it.
Yep.
And it's not necessarily just to screw that other person over. Okay, most of the time it is.
Yeah.
But it's a way of holding somebody off and making them go further out of route to make their connection, which means they have to draw more cards, they have to spend more time getting the resources and stuff to make those connections.
Absolutely. And frankly, if you ever play games with us, you'd best bring your cast iron underpants, because the screw you factor will be there. I don't care who you are.
Yeah. Yeah, bring a chastity belt. We play rough.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so, and I should have mentioned this about Settlers of Catan as well, but Ticket to Ride has a number of expansions and versions. There's Ticket to Ride Nordic Countries, there's Ticket to Ride USA 1910, I think it's called. There's
the Marklin Edition,
yeah.
Ticket to Ride Europe.
Yep. And they all are riffs on the basic game or expansions to the basic game, and they're a lot of fun. Settlers of Catan has a couple of expansions as well. Seafarers of Catan, Cities and Knights of Catan, Traders and Barbarians, and just tons of things to help expand the game and keep your interest in it maintained over the time that you play it. And a lot of them are really fun to add into the game and try out. Speaking of expansions, our next gateway game is a little thing called Carcassonne.
Carcassonne.
Yes. Have you ever played Waterworks, Andy?
Yes.
I have played Waterworks. Okay, so you're familiar with the concept of connecting pipes to, route the water, and, bad things happen, so you throw wrenches on it and all that stuff, right? Okay. Carcassonne takes this idea one step further. You are building the famous medieval French city of Carcassonne. And if you're French, just forgive my pronunciation, because I'm American, and I don't care.
I get a cramp in my tongue when I speak French.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know what to tell you there, guy. I'm going to help you straighten it out.
I thought you were my friend.
Well, I was until the whole tongue thing came up. Now it's just creepy. God. All right. So Carcassonne, it's a tile-based game, which means everything is tiles. You lay down tiles that show several different terrain features on them. You know, they've got walls, they've got roads, they've got fields, they've got cloisters, they've got wells, they've got all kinds of stuff. And the idea is that you can only lay down a tile if it connects up to another piece properly. And that sounds simple enough. Basically, it sounds like putting a jigsaw puzzle together at this point, correct? Right. Well, it's not that easy. You have, in your hot little hands, as you play this game, a quantity of things called meeples.
What?
Meeples.
Measles?
Measles, yeah. No, meeples.
Meeples.
M-E-E-P-L-E-S.
Thank you.
Now, the game calls them followers, but everybody in the gaming world calls these meeples.
Why?
I think it's because it stands for my people, meeple.
That doesn't make any sense.
I know, it's horrible, isn't it? There's no logic to this at all.
Real games.
Yeah, who knew? Anyway, these little wooden men are placed on a given tile in the hopes that eventually, sometime, when the rest of the tiles come into place, in the right way, maybe, you can score some points based on what feature these guys are placed on. I know that sounds still kind of simple, but you have a limited number of meeples, and once they're out, the only way you can get more into your hand is to score a feature that contains one of your meeples. In other words, finish the feature and then collect the points for it.
Oh, that was brilliant. Could you say that again?
No, not even. Not going to happen. All right, at which point you get the meeple back in your hand. And then you're free to place it wherever you would like to place it on the board. But you can only do this when you lay a tile down, not when somebody else does. And you cannot have more than one meeple in a feature, whether it's yours or somebody else's. There are a couple of ways around this. Depending on how you place the tiles, you can sneak a meeple in the back door, provided you can connect that feature up with subsequent tile placements.
Right.
Right. Okay. So, again, still sounding fairly simple, but I got to tell you, once you get it into practice, and once you put it in play, it gets really complicated.
Because we like complicated.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is supposed to be simple.
Yeah. Well, it is a gateway, and it starts out simple. The rules are fairly simple to understand. But the thing is, like all gateway games, there's more complexity to it hidden underneath these simple rules.
Why are you always going to make me dig for stuff?
Yeah, well, because you're the guy with the shovel and the hip waders and, you know. All right. So, one of the important things to realize about Carcassonne as well is that the board is never the same way twice. It's a free-form board, and depending on how you play the tiles, you are going to have different strategies depending on how the game is going. You can score points for fields, and that's the largest field created. Road length, city size, cloisters score points if they're surrounded by tiles. It's all pretty complex once you get down underneath the easy top, soft, chewy center, you know, or chewy outside center thingy. The bit with the chewiness is covering the bit with the hardness. I don't know.
The crunchy things.
Crunchy things in marshmallow.
One of the things that's interesting about it is it's not confined to a specific board as far as size or configuration. You're going to have tiles going six different directions, and it's going to be like this snake going across your game table because nobody's going to lay a tile down where you want them to, or least of all where you expect them to.
Right. And that just keeps the game fresh. It's one of those things that just kind of adds to the game rather than being a confusing sub-factor of the game or whatever. And again, Carcassonne is a game with a huge, huge number of expansions.
My God. Yeah, they just came out with a couple more here not long ago. Mm-hmm.
And it also comes in several different versions. And, I mean, some of these expansions are like four extra cards plus a different-looking wooden figure.
Yeah.
You know, and they go for fairly cheap. They go about, you know, $8 at the most, I think. And they just, they add different strategies and different abilities to the game, and they keep it expandable and keep it fresh and interesting for everybody involved. You can do all sorts of different things. Like, in fact, one of the expansions they just came out with is a catapult, which throws some random piece somewhere onto the board, and then you have to deal with it. It's kind of weird, but it's but that's just the kind of stuff they're doing with it. It's
flaming
really
meeples over the wall.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Andy, these are good and recognizably good gateway games, but they have some flaws.
Really?
They do. It's true. For example, one of the biggest flaws with Settlers of Catan is the whole dice thing. A lot of people don't like random, and dice are nothing if not random. What can happen in Settlers of Catan with inexperienced players is what they call poor placement. You don't put your village or your city in the right place and get kind of goofed on the die rolls. You don't pull as many resources as you need to pull to keep enough in hand to do some decent trading with. This can leave you hung out to dry. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it's kind of bad.
Yeah, that one of the dynamics of that game that'll really hammer you, and early on if you don't do your placements properly.
Right. There's also a slightly unfair mechanic. I mean, it can be unfair. It's approximately equal for everybody. But this is the mechanic of the robber. If you roll a 7 on the dice, there's a robber character that you can pick up and move and use it to steal cards from your opponents. Naturally, if somebody's in the lead, they're going to be seeing the robber a lot. And this can become kind of frustrating, especially if you're really working on building those last few points. Now, in Ticket to Ride, as nice a game as that is, one of its flaws is that essentially it does come down to being a color-matching game. You can only place trains on the board if you have sufficient cards in a given color to do so, which means the cards are very important. So if you get a bad shuffle, or you get a bad mix of cards or whatever, you can be left hanging on train placement. Or other people can collect up a single given color of cards if they know you want them and not let you have them. So it can be a little rough in that respect as well. With Carcassonne, the difficulty there isn't so much in the actual gameplay itself, it's in the scoring. It can be a little complicated and a little tricky, especially if you're trying to score fields. One of the major complaints about the initial release of Carcassonne was that scoring meeples in fields, or farmers, is complicated and doesn't make a whole lot of sense right off the bat until you've done it three or four times. But in spite of all this, these are excellent games to get people introduced to the hobby and hooked into it. They're fun to play, they're usually fairly fast to play, and they keep people involved all the way through with simple rules, yet lots of depth. And that's what makes a really good gateway game. Now, having said that, Andy, do you have any suggestions for other games that can be used as gateway games?
No.
Oh, okay, fine. IndyCast, bye! Let's go home, kids!
What else would be good for Gateway?
Well, one you mentioned to me was On the Underground.
Oh, yes, On the Underground.
Tell me about it.
Well, I guess the only similarity to Ticket to Ride as far as On the Underground is you're trying to lay down routes for a passenger to travel on. It's not completely card driven in the fact that you need to collect colored cards to lay down your routes. Each turn there is a passenger who will travel to another station, and that passenger is going to travel to the closest station on the shortest route. So the idea is to lay down a multiple number of routes because you know this passenger is going to be running back and forth. So every time the card comes up for the passenger to move, if he rides on your line that you've placed down, you'll score for it. And so then it becomes a matter of laying down enough routes to cover enough bases to make points every time that that passenger rolls back and forth.
And it can be very complicated to figure out what routes the passenger is going to take or will need to take. But as you get better at predicting, you'll have a better chance to score points off of those routes. It's a very simple, very fun game. And one of the interesting things about it is that the game map you're playing on is an actual map of the London Underground, hence the name of the game. And it's even licensed from whatever governing body it is that runs the London Underground.
Yeah, and one of the expansions for it that just came out is for the Japanese subway systems, apparently.
Oh, that's cool. Another good gateway game, if you can find it, and this is, it's probably going to be a little hard to come by nowadays, is called Suro, T-S-U-R-O. Like Carcassonne, it is a tile-laying game in which you must connect appropriate routes. But the beauty of this game is that it's on a Japanese theme. And very, very nice artwork, very beautiful game to look at, very simple in its execution. The two primary rules are do not run into other players and do not run off the board, because as you lay a route, you have a stone which you move to follow that route. And if it encounters another player, stone, or it goes off the board, you're out of the game. It's over. And it was produced by the WizKids company, which some of you may have noticed went out of business here not too long ago. But if you can get a hold of it, I highly recommend it. It's an excellent game to look at and an excellent game to play with people who haven't really played games before, because it is very simple, yet very strategic.
Yeah, in fact, if you probably check with your local game store, there's probably a copy of it sitting on the shelf, because they produced probably enough of them to keep some on the shelves out there. And one of the unfortunate things is, as good as the game as it was, it probably didn't get as much press as it should have and didn't become as popular as they hoped it would have been.
Right. Like I said, if you can find it, definitely get it. So those are kind of our recommendations for gateway games and an overview of what gateway games are and what you can expect from them and why they work. Anytime you can introduce anybody to any game is a good thing. That way you have, of course, more people to play with, and eventually they will come up to speed with you, and you'll be able to introduce them to more advanced games if you happen to know a few. If you're just getting into the hobby, and you're just now looking for games that you would like to play with other people, these are the ones you want to check out first. Once you've found one of these that you like, or if you happen to like all three, great, but if you find just one that you like, then you can explore other games that are related to it. Again, using our favorite resource, BoardGameGeek.com, to kind of research and check out other games that are similar, either with similar mechanics or similar themes or similar ideas. And I think that just about wraps up our discussion for gateway games, unless you...
Yeah, one of the things that people want to be aware of, when you're introducing somebody who's new to gaming or who may not have as much experience in gaming as you or some of the other people you're playing with, pick a game that's not so difficult that it's going to give them a cramp in their brain pan, you know, 10 minutes into the game trying to think about things. You want the game to be enjoyable for them. You want them to want to play the game again. You want to generate interest among them. One of the neat things is when you're playing one of these games and everybody's having a good time and everybody's laughing and there's banter going back and forth, that's the best thing in the world in a game store if you're sitting down playing one of these games, because you're going to have a crowd of people around you watching you play this game, asking you questions about it, generating interest, and lo and behold, you've got more players waiting to go next round.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, in a hobby like board gaming, more players is a good thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go, Gamer Nation. That's our take on gateway games and things you can check out and things you can try. So, I wonder what's next.
On the Table.
Okay, welcome to On the Table. This is where we take a look at what Andy and I managed to play this week, both individually and together. And let me see here, what do we got going on? Oh, yeah. On the RPG front, I've been rereading the rules for Dungeons & Dragons 4th edition.
4th?
Yeah, 4th. I don't know. With an eye, I guess, towards trying this thing out again. Because we did not have a very successful first outing.
No, it could have gone much better.
Yeah. We made some stupid mistakes. One of which was our GM. But that's another story.
I think the problem we made, and that I'm sure other people have made, we went into the game with the assumption that it was another bump up from 3 to 3.5 to 4.0. This is not true. 4.0 is a different system altogether.
Yeah. In certain respects, you might as well just assume that you have never seen anything like it before, and because you're really going to have to relearn a whole bunch of stuff. And we tried as our initial outing the Keep on the Shadowfell, that kind of introductory adventure. Now, Gamer Nation, I'm going to give you some advice. And I'm sure you'll probably have heard this over on Radio Free Hamlet, but let me give you this advice anyway. Take the pre-generated characters that come with Keep on the Shadowfell, crumple them up, and throw them away. Make your own characters.
Yes.
Okay? Those guys are broke-tastic. And not broke-tastic in a good way. They're broke-tastic in a bad way. And even so, we still had problems, because like I said, we were making some really big assumptions about how things were played without having given the rules a really thorough read. And let's just say kobolds, they're kind of nasty.
Kobolds were overpowered?
Well,
quite possibly.
Possibly. We might have just been underpowered or underthinking or something.
Well, I think there was a lot of that going on, but yeah. I think we got nerfed by the GM. But
Right. So anyway, I've been rereading the rules, and we're going to try it out again sometime, just as soon as we get some people together to do so.
Yes, and we'd just like to say that we are... We're taking applications for gamers, anybody in the Southern Oregon area that would like to get a game in, you know, so that we don't have to entertain ourselves all the time.
Right. Andy, you been doing anything RPG-wise?
RPG-wise, I've been trying to read the Cthulhu Tech books. I've mostly been awestruck by the artwork in these books. I haven't had a chance to read a lot of the rules mechanics of it, but it looks like an interesting game. One that I've been going back over that's not truly a role-playing game, but is more of a character-heavy miniatures game, is the Crimson Skies game that we mentioned on the last podcast, right. Where you generate a character and a wingman, or multiple characters and multiple wingmen. You have a number of points to put into stats and to give yourself different characteristics and whatnot to help you fly better, to help you shoot better, and to help you do things throughout the game. And it's got some really pretty interesting mechanics to it. It's not your typical turn-based game. Flight and combat takes place simultaneously. On your aircraft sheet, before you move your aircraft, you plot a course as to where you're going to go. You see how fast your plane is going and whether it's going to make it that far, whether it will withstand the G-forces involved in the turns and maneuvers. And then both players move their planes at the same time, and you hope that you're going to line yourself up for a shot.
So would you say this is kind of like, what is it, BattleTech in the skies? MechWarrior in the skies?
A little bit, yeah. It's BattleTech is more of a very much turn-based thing, and I as I've been playing BattleTech for the better part of 20 years now, so yeah, I'm big fan of the BattleTech system. Crimson Skies throws in a nice little twist to where you can't see what your opponent's going to do, and then move your pieces and take actions accordingly. It's one of those things. It feels like an actual dogfight going on because you're having to judge where your opponent's going to go, where he's going to put his plane, where you need to put your plane in order to get a beat on him and get a shot off.
Right. Well, that sounds cool. We're going to have to definitely check that out. And we can play that two-player.
We can.
Awesome.
Two-player indeed.
I love it. Okay. Well, as far as video games go, I really haven't had much time to get any video gaming in this week. I don't know why.
Why is that, podcast boy?
I don't know. Could be something to do with broadcasting my marvelous, amazing voice all over the internet.
Series of connecting tubes.
Yeah. I don't know. That was like Carol Channing. I don't know what that was.
I feel sheepish.
Yeah. Great. Sheepish. What for sheep? Anyway, so my intention, though, is to sometime soon. Boy.
Wow. Habita.
Yeah. I'm going back to the Wasteland.
Uh-huh.
I'm getting back into Fallout 3. I'm going to finish the storyline, finally. And then I'm going to go make a new character and be all mean and nasty and evil and kill people for no reason and shoot dogs and
don't you have like wings, a halo, and the aura thing going on?
I'm basically the Jesus of the Wasteland right now.
Oh well, if you're going to be in the Wastelands, you might as well be Jesus.
Yep. So anyway, I'm gonna go the mean, nasty, evil way just to see what it's like.
Excellent.
Yeah. Hey, we played a pretty cool board game this week, didn't we?
Did we?
I think we did.
Was that me?
That was you.
Oh, hey, it was my game.
Hey, that's right, it was.
Yes.
What was the name of that thing?
The name of that aptly name is Pandemic.
Yeah, very cool. What are we playing? We're playing employees of the Center for Disease Control.
Yes, yeah. Based out of wherever it's based out of.
Hotline.
Atlanta, yeah, Hotlanta. the scientists and researchers and medics.
Yeah.
There's about five different roles that you can play in that game, and it's another cooperative. It's another good game because it's cooperative based. You get to play with the other players, and you're trying to defeat these diseases, wipe them out, and that stuff spreads like wildfire on kerosene, on grease lightning, on a toboggan. It just goes.
Yeah. You will, if you're not on top of things, you will quickly get overwhelmed in that game.
Yeah. We found that out every turn that I drew a card.
Yeah. Somebody seems to think that there needs to be epidemics every turn.
As I recalled, you shuffled the cards, so I don't want to hear it.
Yeah. Sure. Blame it on me.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway, we'll probably get into... We'll talk about Pandemic in a future cast at some point. But for now, you can check it out both on BoardGameGeek and over at Z-Man Games. They're the publishers of it. And it was what? Was it about $30? $35?
Yeah, $30 is about what it runs.
Yeah, and it's well worth it.
Very much worthwhile.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. Well, we're coming up on the end of the show. But before we go, we'd like to take the time to respond to some reader mail and let you know about our broadcasting schedule, plus take care of any other business that needs doing in a segment we'll call Back Chat. First up, we're entertaining ideas for bumpers for Game On. We haven't settled on any particular details for bumper content, but if you'd like to make suggestions for what the bumper should be, head over to the Game On forums at www.d20radio.com and look for the bumper suggestions thread. Post them up there for all to see. Or, if you'd prefer to provide an actual audio sample, you can email it to us at gameon@d20radio.com or fiddleback@gmail.com. The audio sample should be relatively short, say no more than 30 seconds, and contain your name in the body of the message so we can credit you properly if we use it. If you have suggestions for the show, either improvements or topics you'd like to hear us cover, or maybe you think we should be doing something different, go to the Slaps and Bennies thread in the forums and share with us. We'd love to know what you want to hear so we can make this cast better and better for you, Gamer Nation.
Absolutely. We also wanted to give a shout out to Hero OT Beta, Jev Rantnor and Hellman, as well as GM Dave and GM Chris for taking time to comment on episode zero and leave us favorable feedback. It's always nice to know that what you are doing is appreciated and enjoyed by others, especially if you've done something as goofy as episode zero. I have no idea what that means. Oh, and Hellman, yeah, we're like this all the time. It's just the way we are.
On a related note, Feedburner, our feed host, has been quite active, and it just loves telling us how many of you listeners have subscribed to our show. So far, 13 intelligent, charming, beautiful, and all-around great people are, are signed up to hear us regularly. You can join them and be counted among the ranks of the Cognoscenti just by subscribing to the cast.
Head over to Cognoscenti.
Yeah, it was on the calendar yesterday. head over to www.d20radio.com and check it out.
Yeah. Brian and I are so jazzed by the whole experience that we're going into a weekly production earlier than we expected. Oh, I'm reading this for the first time. That's great. Thanks for letting me know. Look for us again in a week's time with all new episodes of Game On.
Finally, remember, if you'd like to contact us, and I don't know why you would at this point, but if you want to, you can write to us at gameon@d20radio.com or fiddleback@gmail.com. You can also log on to the D20 Radio forums at d20radio.com and leave us messages there. We'd love to hear from you, and if you aren't careful, you just might find yourself featured on the show. So, until next time, Gamer Nation,
Game On!
Game On!
This podcast is intended for entertainment and educational purposes only. All specific names, titles, or products mentioned are copyrighted by the respective rights holders. Some sounds and music are provided courtesy of Soundsnap.com and Freesound.org. Reboot is copyright Alliance Entertainment. All original content of this podcast and its related website are intellectual property of Game On and D20 Radio.
This podcastable.